Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The classic protagonists of a textbook pitch invasion, the transfer gossip column stars who simply won't ever make it to the Premier League no matter how hard we try, the eccentric, swashbuckling, impish and talismanic selections for our Adjective 11, and a forensic analysis of Richard Keys and Andy Gray on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 159 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. Alongside me once again is Charlie Eccleshare. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Hot on the heels of Keezy talking about big Sanos, listener Ollie Hain gets in touch and has pointed us towards a list of shareholders in Sainsbury's. Pazena Investment Management, Schroders PLC, BlackRock, Visa Equity Investment, and with a colossal 335 million shares, Qatar Holdings.
Wow.
Is that then food washing, grocery washing?
Yeah,
nowhere's sacred, is it? Nowhere is sacred.
No,
but it's so much more than that. It's like an institution, so it's it really is a way of life washing.
As long as they don't get their claws into M&S, maybe they already have. Alongside you, of course, is David Walker. Dave, crunch nine aside clash on Tuesday night between The Athletic and CNN, who on paper I wouldn't fancy for this sort of thing. How did it go down?
Yeah, the lesser spotted nine aside game was unfortunately a 4-1 defeat for The Athletic. However, in mitigation, three of those four goals were, well, one was a fluke, the other two were pretty hapless pieces of goalkeeping and defending. So basically, it was 1-1, really.
Yeah, I genuinely would love to see the XG as well. I really think we would have had a much higher XG. But, you know, a nine-a-side's weird. I don't think I'd ever played nine-a-side before. They seemed quite well-versed.
Messed with your mind.
Yeah, it's just a bit. I mean, you sort of. I think by the second half, we got used to it, but
the moment of the match for me was when I was off on the sidelines in the second half and Charlie Eccleshare, experienced 11-a-side footballer, as listeners to this podcast will be well aware of, was sort of anxiously remonstrating to the touchline when he found himself playing centre-back, saying, I don't know how to play this position. I've never played there before. Can someone else go centre-back?
Deadly seriously, I bet, as well.
Yeah.
As anyone who's ever played with me will know, that's a justifiable position for me to take. I mean, I never have played centre back, and I was all at sea. Luckily, it was in the middle of a three as well, and the three were like no interest in defending. So yeah, I was.
Were you at sixes and sevens?
I was, although I don't think I actually was played there long enough to be at sixes and sevens. Mercifully, after about a minute, I was able to swap with someone without actually having had to do anything.
I would have thought centre-half is one of those positions you can style out, you know, just act out as if you were being that person. I think it's really easy to play that role and look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I should just embrace that side of it. Yeah.
Not to worry. I don't know who we're playing next, but Hurry set to return, I can assure you, at least in goal, just to shore up the defence. What's our in-tray? Yeah, good question. Anyway, let's have a little brief adjudication panel, shall we? Couple of matters to pick up on from the last 48 hours or so. Bournemouth back in the Premier League, Dave. There's some weariness around about Bournemouth coming back to the Premier League, with all due respect to the South Coast outfit.
I think sort of twinned with Fulham as well. I mean, you know, not to get into the business of sport podcast territory, but you know, parachute payments does seem to mean that we are going to get the same sort of team just going up and down more frequently. Like, there's always been this thing of like yo-yo clubs or whatever, but it seems more frequent now. Like, it seems to be, you know, used to get like the odd West Brom coming up and down, and then it would be a mixture of people. But now, if you're going to get the same two or three clubs going up and down, if Norwich and Watford come back up again next season,
yeah,
even as a Watford fan, I'd sort of understand the general Premier League fans' apathy towards that sort of situation.
That's absolutely fine. Obviously, that, you know, that's big picture stuff. But Charlie, it kind of insulated from all of this, despite the fact that Bournemouth were geared to come all the way back up quite quickly. Despite that, their promotion was sealed with a late win over Nottingham Forest on Tuesday night, and a pitch invasion took place. There was no hint of, you know, this was by the numbers, we were expected to do this anyway. Classic pitch invasion scenes. And once again, I looked at the scenes unfolding. I thought, I can't think of many worse places to be than be a visiting player in the middle of a gleeful pitch invasion, which is also at your expense as well, because you needed to win the game.
Yeah.
My eyes were always drawn to the players, thinking, who's harassing them? What's happening? And they didn't want to kind of quickly run off because it makes them look like they're scared. So it's a really horrible place to be, basically.
Yeah. Just get your head down, dignified. There's nothing you can do or say in that situation, is there? That is horrible. But yeah, I mean, Bournemouth, they did have one season in there, didn't they? They haven't come straight back up.
Yeah,
full. Oh, yeah,
they were in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, but yeah.
I think it's the big, would you say that being a visiting player in a pitch invasion, I think it's like one of the big things that people forget about that famous Troy Deeney goal for Watford in 2013 and the ensuing pitch invasion after that moment, is that Anthony Knockaert, who has kick-started that whole unbelievable sequence of events by missing a penalty and the rebound, is in tears in the middle of it. Like, that's the worst possible example of what you're talking about. Not only is he a visiting player, he's responsible, directly responsible for everything that's happening around him. And he's in tears. And like, what can he do? What can he do?
Genuinely fair play to him for ever playing again.
I mean, that must have been sort of bad dream.
Yeah, that whole Deeney goal, I do always just think of him missing the penalty and how horrific that must have been.
Awful. It did make me think about the classic protagonists of a textbook pitch invasion. Listener Sam Munnery writes in and said, there's always at least one person engaging in some mild goading of the opposition players on their way towards celebrating with their own players. Quite an art form, I think, Dave, the goading of opposition players. I think it's quite a drive-by thing, because the average fan hasn't got the courage to really go face-to-face unless they are really... You know,
might sort of slap them on the back, sort of thing.
Or not even touch them, sort of go around their aura, as in
But then there's also similar sort of sphere is the earnest trying to shake the hands of the players you've lost. Like, no, seriously, mate, unlucky. Fair play, unlucky, mate. Yeah. they don't want it. Leave him alone.
But I mean, it's just another element, Charlie, of if you get the opportunity to touch a professional footballer, you can't turn it down.
Yeah, but you're right. I think drive-by is a really good description of it, because they'll often be the, as you're running, a sort of maybe like the sticking
like
the finger
skip.
Up, but
it's
you're
like
doing it
along,
as you go, so you're safe.
You can face them and then flick the Vs. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. But you're sort of you're safe.
Francis Foles writes in, Dave, and says, there's always a set of crutches being waved around.
That's so true.
Statistically, there's always going to be at least one person with a set of crutches.
It's a great
football stadium at all times. We're kind of obliged to frown upon these scenes, Charlie, but it isn't all about violence. It isn't all about manic endangerment of people's safety. Mike Bailey writes in and says, there's always a somewhat incongruous middle-aged man strolling around the pitch looking wistfully at the stands, reminiscent of lower league manager Servais' empty stadium prior to TV interview in the 1990s. There are some sort of casual pitch invaders. They tend to be of a more advanced age, I think.
I guess why not? I mean, the opportunity is there. You're not doing it in an aggressive way, but everyone else is doing it. Might be a last chance to get on the pitch.
Dave, I do wonder, though, I mean, maybe this threshold has never been threatened too often, but at what point do banning orders stop and it just starts to become, well, you know, they got carried away, it's fine. I mean, it's an all or nothing situation. You can't just ban some people. So How many people would have to invade a pitch for them to get banned? And then after that, it becomes, it's fine, we'll forget about it.
Or how few people would have to invade the pitch?
Correct.
I suppose. It's a good question. I think...
One for the authorities.
Fewer than 20.
The thing is, you never, like you said, it's either one person or very occasionally like three people
point,
sort of just at the front of the stand when, in a celebration moment who sort of jump in and kind of try and get back into the crowd or whatever.
Yeah.
You never see like 25 people just going on together.
No.
And then it's
three or 3,000.
I think once you get into sort of double figures, then that even might sort of break the cut. Everyone, you know, it kind of encourages those sort of...
Floodgates.
Just, yeah, the floodgates are open. Exactly.
I mean, similarly, Charlie, Fulham have had two pitch invasions, one for getting promoted and one for winning the championship in the space of a few days. I mean, where do you stand on that? I mean, they both feel pitch invasion worthy, don't they?
I think the spontaneity point Dave makes is key. If it is just the moment takes them, that's one thing. If during that 7-0 they were sort of limbering up for the pitch invasion, which they probably were. I mean, they had a long enough lead time. They knew it was coming.
They were probably thinking about doing it 12 hours earlier. So, that's not spontaneous.
The calm before the storm of the pitch invasion.
Fine. It's a tricky concept.
It is.
But speaking of Fulham, Dave, you mentioned yo-yo clubs just there. Fulham's vice chairman and director of football operations, Tony Khan, gave an interview with The Athletic's Danny Taylor this week. One quote jumped out to many people. He said, "I don't want Fulham to be a yo-yo club. I just want us to be a yo club." And as listener Jamie Ward writes in, he says, he's got it wrong here. The first movement a yo-yo makes is downwards. The upward movement is reflected in the second yo, so he just wants Fulham to go down.
That's superb, superb. A man after my own heart, taking that very literally.
I mean, there's an American aspect to this, of course, Charlie, as well. I think it's quite a nice quote if you just focus on that part.
Yeah, yeah. You can see vaguely where he was going. and he probably wasn't anticipating being taken quite so literally. But if you're a public figure... That's going to happen.
Being a yo club then is in the way that the listener suggests would mean it's like, you know, when you had those fancy yo-yos that you could do the ball bearings in and you can do that thing where they just stay down at the bottom spinning. That would be Fulham staying down in the championship, spinning forever.
That's like doing a Leeds, isn't it? All the way down to League One, but then eventually coming back up spectacularly. Yeah, okay. Charlie, I'm proud to reveal the new holder of the coveted title of much-linked South American striker who will never actually play in the Premier League, no matter how many times he appears in the daily BBC Sport gossip column, and that's Benfica striker Darwin Nunez. It's not going to happen. I'm telling you now, it's the early rumblings of a kind of enduring ever-present in the gossip columns. It's not going to happen. No one knows what he looks like. No one's seen him play.
Interesting. You think Darwin Nunez is going to be the Leandro Damião? I mean, have you been burnt? I mean, did you get excited thinking that we were finally going to get to see Damião and the others, and then had your heart broken?
No, this isn't me sort of safeguarding myself against future disappointment. This is just me speculating on a list of players who I think are the new wave, the new generation of transfer gossip kind of perennials. Let me give you some others, because some of these are going to miss. Well, all of these are going to miss the boat. It's just not happening. They're not coming to the Premier League. I'm sorry. Duye Cheleta-Tsar, the Marseille defender, he's past the point of being linked so often that he's not allowed to come to the Premier League anymore. Not going to happen. Bear in mind, I don't care about work permit rules here. This isn't part of the equation. I don't know anything about it.
Really stepping on Matt Slater's toes again.
Denzel Dumfries, Dave, he's not coming to the Premier League.
Okay. I've not heard him linked too much, to be honest.
But he has. Yeah. But I think he might be in a few years when he's past his best and he's kind of newly promoted or lower mid-table club.
Yeah.
Or maybe after he's had a serious injury.
Or maybe once Everton or Newcastle finally decide which one they want to sign.
Yeah.
Stefan de Vrij, Charlie, could have signed for Spurs at some point, but he's not going to, and then therefore he will never.
Yeah, I think he probably has missed the boat. I mean, he's pretty old now, I think.
30.
Unless
Villa?
Could Burnley make a rare exception and, in a kind of Weghorst-y sort of way and bring him in?
Yeah, he's going to play for someone who play in Claret, definitely. One of the Claret teams. The door remains slightly ajar for Stefan de Vrij. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, David. A player who does not exist. He doesn't exist. It's a complete myth.
Yeah, and also, I'm sure I saw something recently on Twitter which is another sort of little nice little wrinkle to this sort of world, is that there was a Milinkovic-Savic at Manchester United, like in the youth team, but he was a different one. But there was like some confusion. There was some Man United fan going, "Oh, I can't believe we let Milinkovic-Savic go when he was 17. We're going to have to buy him back." Somebody was like, "Oh, it was a different one."
That's good.
So well, that seals the deal even more. Charlie, some more names for you. Alessandro Bastoni, Patrick Schick, Paulo Dybala, Aurelien Tchouameni. They're not happening. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Dybala, again, could he do like a Rodriguez to Everton in a year or two?
But no one's going to want to do those sorts of signings anymore. They've seen what happens. I really do fear for the kind of take a punt on them, mercurial European-based playmaker-y type player. I can't see it happening anymore.
You think the clubs have finally learned?
Yeah, I think so. Wow. I don't think we'll see another James Rodriguez type signing. I really don't. Which leads us on nicely, I think, to this week's themed 11. I wanted to do this for quite a while, actually, Dave. This is the adjective 11, an issue, you know, subject matter very close to my heart, the language of football. And what I want to do here is pick a classic 4-4-2 of adjectives for each role in a team. The most classic one word, or you can hyphenate if you really must, phrase that we apply to each of our 11 positions traditionally. Let's start with goalkeepers, Dave, which I think tends to be quite a negative slanted thing because we tend to focus on their weaknesses rather than their strengths. So I would kick you off with something like erratic, or perhaps its forefather, eccentric, which I don't think we hear for goalkeepers as much anymore. It tends to be more of an 80s, 90s thing, eccentric. You don't hear it anymore.
But then, although I was listening to a podcast this morning describing Jordan Pickford in those very terms, actually. Mm. So I still think you do still get a bit of that, I think. But yeah, they are, generally speaking, goalkeepers are a lot calmer these days in terms of their general sort of aura and their presence. They are more of a calming influence, aren't they? You know, they'll play the ball, they'll come out, they'll make sure they're sort of more on top of stuff. Yeah. But that still wouldn't feel like, I still feel like eccentric or erratic. They are in the right ballpark for me.
Charlie, I don't think there's a standout positive adjective we can use here, is there? Commanding? No. That's not for a goalie, is it?
Well,
you can command your box, but you can't be a commanding goalkeeper.
Mm, yeah, it's a commanding centre-back, isn't it? I mean, yeah, because I'm thinking like the hapless goalkeeper. Mm. Like I think that's my first memory of that word is in relation to a goalkeeper, maybe to a referee as well.
Yeah, I think this might be the only position in this team that's going to have a negative one. So I think it's fine to have that. Adrian Wharton bends the rules a little bit, Dave. He goes for bald American, which is a nice touch. And very perceptive indeed. But you can't have it. That's two words. So you can't have that. I'm going to go with eccentric. Let's have eccentric. Let's bring it back.
Do you know what it could be as well? A more complimentary is veteran, which I know could also apply to a number of positions. But just because the bald American made me think of that with Friedel and how he played on into
his
40s.
What's the threshold for being a veteran goalkeeper? Because as we all know,
they do play. Yes, it would be raised. But I still think even with that raised, I still think you might be talking about like a 35-year-old as a veteran goalkeeper. And I reckon there are more of them than there would be like, because the centre back, they still need to be in their 30s, don't they?
Yeah, I see your logic here, but I don't think it's goalkeeper specific enough.
No, it's not. It's not exclusive.
We need to nail this, and I think traditionally goalkeepers are defined by their supposed psychological flaws. So I'm going to go with eccentric for our goalkeeper. But let's move on to our right backs, Charlie. Quite a dynamic role these days. Plenty of words we could use. I kick you off with this from Blinks, who straight in there with marauding, which I like.
Mm. Yeah, marauding's good. Buccaneering, which I guess can be either fullback. I mean, that's hard, is it, to find one that's specific, not to... But I kind of think of those types of words more about the fullback necessarily than the right back. Marauding. Adventurous?
Adventurous? Oh, adventurous is good. It does work, actually. It could be fullback specific.
Yeah, no, I don't think you'd apply that to another position.
Mm, because kind of midfielders and strikers are, you know, they should be up there already.
The adventurous striker.
Very adventurous striker, yeah, that doesn't work. Yeah, Dave, it isn't just about dynamism, it's about ambition as well, isn't it? So we need something that kind of encompasses both. So I do like adventurous, but I also like marauding. Buccaneering is good. Would you like the casting vote here?
I like marauding. Buccaneering's a bit too cartoony for me. It's a bit too much. Adventurous, yes, but I prefer marauding. It's a nicer word.
Good. Marauding's a happy medium between the two, because there's an element of intent there, if not quite as fun-loving as buccaneering, sadly. Right, over to left-backs then. Charlie, we've got our kind of gung-ho right-back, but what do we want? Do we want a more steady Eddie on the left? Words, very mundane words like steady, solid, durable, reliable.
Yeah, I mean, I always remember like solid and fun spectacular. I know that's three words, but that was always the sort of the go-to when not really knowing how to describe a fullback, but setting on that as the default. I mean, obviously they'll have a cultured left foot often, but I don't think you would describe them as cultured in and of themselves.
It's weird because whilst left backs are the more fashionable choice, then I don't see them as much of a physical presence as a right back. So I mean, we could focus on their artistry, but I do think it might just be about sort of a player who's happy to stick to his role and stick to his task.
But it does kind of depend on which sort of era you're placing it at, because I mean, you could say the same for both fullback positions, but like Andy Robertson and João Cancelo, like they're not solid and unspectacular. No. They're more spectacular than they are solid, and they're classy. Like Cancelo's like a classy, like he's cultured. Robertson's brilliant. Like
the basic is attacking.
But what's Matty Target?
How about cultured then? Cultured could work, but I feel like cultured centre half is still the most.
Yeah, I just don't think you'd ever. I mean, like I say, attacking is very basic. But back in the day, you would have heard someone described as an attacking left back. But it is. It's,
do we want adventurous boring. Then? Are we bringing back adventurous?
Yeah, let's do adventurous.
Fine.
I just love the idea of how thinking of that literally, and a fullback having an adventure and sort of.
What's a word for someone like Robertson who is just
relentless?
Yeah, he's up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down all game. He does everything, but he's
just
so
distill that into one word,
energetic.
Did you say relentless there, Adam?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is basically what you're describing.
I think I still prefer adventurous, so that's one we're going for. Right, into our centre-backs, which I think is where we're going to gather some pace here. Dave, Jonas Spildre-Jordet says towering, which I like, because you can use that for headers too. I do like towering centre-half.
But towering to me is just a towering header. I wouldn't necessarily think of the centre-back as towering in totality.
You can have more layers to their physical presence. I think you might be right. What about commanding, Dave? Mm. Commanding good for you?
Yeah, definitely. That's your Virgil van Dijk type figure, who's just assured, strong, quick, good at everything, commanding, yeah.
It's definitely. Everything, isn't works it? It's psychological, works better than, physical.
Yeah, and that's exactly why you can't have it as a goalkeeper, being a commanding goalkeeper, because there's just more to the position.
Damn right. I feel like for this one, Charlie, we could have had No Nonsense, our first hyphenated controversy. I do like No Nonsense, although I think commanding has kind of overtaken it in a modern context.
Yeah, I think that works well for
we
that one.
We could have
one.
Two then, here, couldn't we, though?
Yeah, I was going to say, because then next to him...
I've got
do you
other
want
ideas.
The
bo- I've got yeah. other ideas oh. for this.
But what about agricultural?
I think it's more for a tackle.
Yeah, I think it's more agricultural defending. Okay. Than
a brand of defending.
Challenge. Yeah. But I mean, because then you've got the ball playing. I know it's hyphenated. The cultured, if you want that alongside the commanding. I mean, ball playing centre-back was everywhere back in...
Yeah,
back
but in I think commanding now has absorbed that. I would say you can absorb the technical element. So I think commanding... Agricultural defender would only play in a farmer's league, Dave.
Well, obviously, yeah.
I also like grizzled. We don't see grizzled enough anymore.
Grizzled.
Neil McColl suggested that. I like grizzled.
The gnarled.
Don't you grizzled in any other context than old centre-halves?
You still get, coming back to this kind of, the promotion relegation... situation, you still get like when you if you're in a team like Watford, who fans are talking about the inevitability of being in the Championship next season, they'll be like, oh, I can't wait to see João Pedro mugging off some grizzled centre back next season. But like, they actually don't really exist anymore. Like, all these teams are, they've all got like John Stones replicants.
Who's the most grizzled centre half you can think of? I've got someone in my mind instantly, and I'm trying
Jerry
to
Taggart.
Jerry Taggart was grizzled. Wow, Chris Morgan of Sheffield United is the most grizzled one I can think of. Very
I was
grizzled
thinking
man.
Dave Watson of Everton.
Paul Butler.
And how old these guys used to look. Like watching, if you watch now, Greedy. Those players, and they're now like our sort of age. Very depressing.
Right. Commanding. Our first centre half is commanding. As much as I did like Grizzled, as much as we all seem to have fallen in love with it, commanding it is. Alongside him, I want someone more of a David Luiz figure, in which case I want to bring back our adventurous words. And Charlie, I'm going to go for swashbuckling. We have to have swashbuckling in this team.
Swashbuckling is such a great word.
Ball carriers. I mean,
it's more niche, I guess, but there's definitely room for that to evolve from the ball playing of yesteryear.
Yeah, a kind of caution to the wind aspect to this, Dave. Someone who's just going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. Yeah, yeah. I do like gung-ho, actually, but I think gung-ho is a collective thing, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah, the team's gone gung-ho.
I'm not sure I'm having a centre-back taking the game by the scruff of the neck.
No, I did. I saw the fear in your eyes.
But, yeah.
Just because you've never done it, Dave.
Yeah. Well, neither of you, obviously.
True. I did yesterday. I took the scruff of the neck and said, get me out of this position. That's leadership.
Just say yes to swashbuckling and we'll move swiftly on.
Yep.
Fantastic. Yep. Right, over to our right winger. Yep. So many words we could go with here. Charlie, I'll kick you off with nippy.
A nippy winger, yep. A silky, skillful.
More of a left-sided thing?
Do you think?
Elegance is more of a left-sided thing, I would say. Right wing is all about power.
Power.
Pacey.
Yeah, pacey.
Pacey's a bit boring. Let's have something a bit better.
Nippy's funner than...
Nippy's good, isn't it?
Nippy, but it also isn't like... It's not like properly quick, is it, Nippy? You wouldn't describe Adama Traore as nippy.
No, it's 5 yards, isn't it, nippy?
It's getting in and out those little spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, nippy's good. Nippy's happy with that. It's all to play for over on the other side. So left wingers, Charlie, Ed Quoth the Raven says Jinky, which is very winger, Scottish. Yeah. Only Scottish wingers, perhaps. Jinky Johnston, of course. Pat Nevin was Jinky.
Jinky is a great word.
I like Jinky. But can we have Jinky and Nippy? Feels like they're a bit...
I don't know. I mean, can you be Mercurial?
Yeah, the same.
Mercurial's good. Joe Tyler also suggested Mercurial, as did I, separately, on my little spreadsheet. Mercurial's good, isn't it? Or is a danger that it's a bit... Should we
it's
have
a bit number 10-y.
It's a bit 10-y, isn't it?
But, I mean, that's the thing. It's a great word. It's just whether it's left winger or the number 10. I mean, I think we have to have it.
Yeah, I'm happy to accommodate it over on the wing, Dave, because Mercurial players do have a habit of getting... of sort of fading out of games. And the best place to fade out of games is on the periphery, which is quite literally on the side of the pitch.
Would Wilfred Zaha fall under Mercurial?
I think so.
He's on the left wing, isn't he?
There's a bit more consistency to his game before Palace stands right in.
Yeah, I think now he's less Mercurial.
Yeah.
But I definitely think
they're talismanic, actually.
Yeah, yeah. We're saving talismanic for later. I don't think wingers should be talismanic.
No.
So, yeah, let's keep them in the unreliable sphere. So Mercurial's good. So let's move into our centre midfielders. Again, I want some sort of partnership here, Charlie. So let's go with the more scrappy situation. Ross FJ says tenacious. Stat City says we must have a combative midfielder. Mm. I want to go off on a slight tangent and say I feel like they can be violent and scrappy, but they can also be impish. I like impish. Impish is great.
Impish, yeah.
Can you be impish and scrappy?
Yeah, short man syndrome.
Yeah, sort of Gattuso.
Dennis Wise.
Impish, though.
No, I don't.
Beardsley
was
impish, but that's not what we're looking for.
Yeah, because impish, there's a sort of cheekiness.
Mm. Okay, maybe we'll use impish elsewhere then. We want a violent man, Charlie. So what are you going for?
Combustible. Pugnacious.
Quite dreary. Chill out.
The pugnacious. Yeah. I think something like that. I mean, maybe is that a bit
bustling.
Too much? Is that a bit dreary? Bustling.
Bustling, tenacious, combative. Which one sums up this
combative does
combative.
Everything. I think it does.
Fine, combative it is. So alongside our combative midfielder, someone who's going to cover ground, perhaps do it in a fairly stylish way, and throwing grammatical caution to the wind here, Charlie, I'm going for Rolls Royce. You can use it in an adjective or
not again.
You can use it adjectively.
No.
Yes! A Rolls Royce midfielder. It's fine.
This is opening up that can of worms, potentially. But I think also the sort of tireless, if you're talking about that sort of getting up and down box to box. I mean, box to box, obviously, is another, you know, that's really taking advantage of the hyphen rules. Yeah, getting in two. Yeah, if you want to sort of convey that element of it, which is quite important, The indefatigable.
I was going to go for indefatigable. Yeah, but I can't pronounce it
used
properly.
For, used for Saddam Hussein and nobody else, in my experience. So unless he's patrolling our engine room, I don't feel like we could use it. I'm not seeing anything better than Rolls-Royce here. You're going to have to impress me.
I think you could have talismanic in a central midfield.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah, like a Steven Gerrard, Brian Robson.
Brian Robson, yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay. I think.
Because that's because he.
Yeah, the talismanic captain, midfielder, right? Definitely.
This guy's our captain.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's right.
Talismanic it is. Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to waste it further up the field.
Even like Declan Rice, kind of. Yeah.
He's on his way, isn't he? Yeah. To being talismanic.
Nobes at one point in his own mind, anyway.
Sorry to go all Richard Keys here, but the number of people who think that the plural of talisman is talismen. It's not. It's nothing to do with a man. It's a. It's kind of like a thing that you. It's like a gold thing that you wear. That's a talisman.
So talismans. You can't have a team of talismen.
No. So talismanic. He's wearing our captain's armband quite proudly too. So that's our midfield.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Okay, let's move up front. I think instinctively, Dave, we're going for a big man, small man partnership just for the purposes of variety. Mm. So what are we calling our big man?
It's a very outdated 11, this. Wouldn't survive in the modern game.
Yep, showing our age.
What are we calling our big man?
Beanpole.
The beanpole seems so weedy, though, isn't it? It's not.
That is quite derogatory.
Yeah, we don't really have proper beanpoles anymore, do we?
No.
Crouch was the last beanpole. Really? Mm. Towering? Can we have Towering back?
The Towering centre forward.
Yeah? Can we bring
the
it back?
The lanky centre forward.
Towering centre forward.
Complete
centre forward.
It's a bit boring, isn't it?
It is boring.
There are better words for the small man. Like diminutive striker is nice.
Can we have impish? What about impish?
I think you could have an impish striker. Michael Owen, is he impish?
Owen was a bit impish.
Paul Dickhoff was impish.
He could be. I think impish with like a dinked finish or something.
Because there's a hint of kind of being cute, you know, about being impish.
I think Robbie Keane was quite impish.
Yeah.
He was all his goals seemed to be a little bit tricksy and cheeky in their execution.
Yeah, I like this. Let's have impish. Let's have impish as our kind of
impish
sort
is,
of number 10.
Great.
I suppose like even somebody like to try and haul it even slightly into the modern day. Like Sergio Aguero, he sort of had a slightly impish quality about him.
Yeah.
I think anybody under 5'7".
Timo Werner, he's a bit impish.
He's well on the way to being... I wouldn't call Werner impish.
Sort of runs about quite a lot.
No, you need to be a bit jinky.
Yeah, well, I think also you need to be stealthy because I think imps are quite elusive and sort of... They're hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Which is like, where I... So you... Yeah. Which is... You know what you're getting with an imp. And
it's a difference between an elf and an imp. Who knows?
Yeah, I think you need to have that elusiveness.
Okay.
Impish, which is why I think Aguero is quite a good shout.
So let's have something a bit more decisive for their strike partner. Someone maybe focus on their career, on their goal scoring. Journeyman?
Journeyman.
I mean, journeyman really should only be strikers, Charlie.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you might stretch to a journeyman centre-back, but yeah, predominantly it's a journeyman striker. The well-travelled or much-travelled?
Much-travelled is good, yeah. Again, seems only strikers that get that. Similarly, Dave, out-and-out, that's only strikers, right?
Out-and-out number nine.
Yeah.
I'm happy to make an exception for our hyphenation rule. Well, we haven't really got a hyphenation rule here, but I'm happy to have out-and-out here because I think it ticks a lot of boxes.
A good cousin of out-and-out, recognised. Which,
we're using
again,
a very, very strict set of circumstances. Actually.
It is, but again, that's such a strikery thing.
Yeah.
We've only got one recognised right-back.
Oh, but you can have recognised centre-backs.
You can have recognised centre-backs, but it's still, I think, predominantly
a striker. They are left without a recognised goalkeeper.
Yeah, recognised goalkeeper.
Much like the Athletic in the one side. Should we have out and out? Because it implies traditional. It implies, as Dave wanted, complete, that they can do the job in its entirety. And it also suggests, Dave, goal-scoring prowess.
Yeah.
Great word. So should we have an out and out? No one's going to complain. Who are you going to ask?
I think that's good, because it's just such a... It's another one of those you stop and think it's such a ludicrous term.
Or do we go down the sort of, what was it, like, clinical, something specific to their ability?
I know you can have clinical strikers, but also I think half the time it's attributed to finishes as well.
The clinical finish.
Clinical finish.
Out and out. An out and out striker. An out and out number nine along with our impish number 10.
I like out and out because it will just look good in our little lineup. And if anyone complains about the hyphenation, then tough. Brilliant. So here's our team then. Let's run through it before we move on to the final section of today's podcast. Our goalkeeper is eccentric. Our right back is marauding. Our left back is adventurous. Centre backs are commanding and swashbuckling. On the right wing, we've got a nippy winger. In the central midfield, we've got combative midfielder and our talismanic skipper. On the left, we have mercurial winger. And up front, we have an out-and-out striker and his impish strike partner.
Yeah, I think that works, actually, because like going through them, as you said that there, I could sort of think of a player in the Premier League now that kind of fits for every single one. Jordan Pickford, I think, is eccentric. Yeah. Jared Bowen's a nippy winger. As we just said, Zaha could be a mercurial left winger. Robertson and Trent are adventurous and marauding fullbacks. Van Dijk, John Stones.
Oh, you're a Trent man, are you? Shame. Real shame to see.
Yeah. I think that works. Declan Rice, there's plenty of combative midfielders knocking about.
Good.
Alan.
Glad we did this, Charlie, despite there being a slight hint that we might have done it before.
Yeah, I mean, we should probably preempt those accusations. Let's get on the front foot.
Happy for anyone to try
and prove
it.
We may have touched on it. Have we done it in exactly that format? No. Yeah.
If tens of thousands of people want to go back and listen to all the episodes again and bump up our numbers, I'm very happy for them to do so. On the subject of doing something we've never done before, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner. But this time, it's a retro one. Okay, we go all the way back now to 2002. Listener David C433 asks us, have you ever covered Keys and Grey on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
What?
Wow. I've always been aware of this vaguely, Charlie.
Yeah. I think it might even have popped up on my YouTube recommendations or something. And for whatever reason, I've never watched it. I mean, it's mad that I've never watched it.
It is in its entirety quite something, but if we break it all down, the glory really does pour out.
How long is the full thing?
40 minutes, something like that.
Okay, right. It probably suggests quite a decent run.
Yeah,
yeah, 40 minutes, but I've managed to distill it down into its real golden nuggets, if that is indeed how distillation works. It's not. Let's kick off where we ought to kick off. Keys and Grey entering.
To welcome our next pair of players this evening, Andy Gray and Richard Keys. Bye, lads. That's it. Good luck. Thank you. That's it. Good luck.
Just the idea, Charlie, of Richard Keys and Chris Tarrant being in the same place.
Yes.
absolutely absurd.
It's that Spider-Man meme of them pointing at one another, Tarrant and Keyes.
Tarrant went for the Gray first, Keyes second there.
Yeah.
On a tangent there, a very, very Tarrant-y little moment there where he does a little as he gets up into his stool, which only Chris Tarrant would do. That's completely unnecessary and actually not suitable for a, you know, a high-grade TV programme. But yet, there he is doing it nonetheless. So, as with all celebrity guests on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, there's a bit of entry-level banter just to ease everyone in, get the vibe going.
Two big lads looking absolutely terrified. We have Andy Gray and Richard Keyes here, both of them sports presenters on digital television. Only one of them has also been Britain's most expensive footballer, which Andy was back in... Well, it wasn't Richard Keyes, was it? Andy was back in 1979.
Textbook settling in stuff, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, really nice, really nice. Digital television.
That's amazing. Because I was thinking... it's so funny because I was thinking, oh, I wonder with the whole Sky thing how that was handled and that skillfully navigated.
Mm. But it doesn't take long, Charlie, for Richard Keyes to start to lower the tone.
So you sit there almost as the sensible, intelligent one, with this ranting Scottish person beside you.
Yeah.
Is that how it's going to be this evening?
I'd like to think so. He's very dominant.
Oh, that look!
Yeah, Charlie, this is Keyes-y right at the end of his kind of supermarket own brand James Bond phase, I think, where he really, yeah, he's starting to become a bit more grizzled, let's say. But it's too much, isn't it? None of that.
I mean, I wish our listeners could see the look he gives to the audience, sort of Roger, the James Bond thing, kind of Roger Moore raised eyebrow.
Skin crawl. Up next, Keyes-y introducing the first of their phone-a-friends. In a weird style.
Reedy?
No. You might be surprised, actually. He introduces their first phone-a-friend, but introduces them in the style as if they're a manager about to get the sack, live on beIN Sports.
Now, interestingly tonight, one of your phone-a-friends, I thought it was an interesting choice, is Alan Shearer. Mm. How's he going to be?
Well, that's a cunning plot as well, because...
Well, it is.
Well, there's no more sceptical an audience than the one we work to, which is football players and football managers. If we don't do well here tonight, we are going to get absolutely hammered.
Yeah.
If we struggle...
What do you mean, if?
If we struggle, it's Shearer's call.
He's contributed nothing.
Shearer.
Really, it is a bit jarring, isn't it? But big pals with Andy Gray, apparently, or at least back then. So they're into the swing of things now, and they navigate their way through the first question, and there's another easy one for £200.
Question number two is for £200. In the saying about what's done is done, it's no use crying over spilt what? Salt, beans, milk, drinks.
What if we pause and put a bit of drama into it?
Well, then you might be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Embarrassing.
We'll go milk.
It's the right answer. You've got £200.
The first little bits of tension there between Tarrant and Keyes.
Which starts to grow. Nice. To be honest, I only included that clip because of the way that Tarrant says beans. Which is his equivalent of the Richard Keyes name pronunciation.
Mind.
Yeah. Next up for £300, but this one is right up Andy Gray Street.
Right, you got £200. Question number three is for £300. Which of these words does not refer to the number two? Patrick. Pair. Couple. Race.
You can predict the banter.
You scored a few in your time, sir.
Ah! Yeah, I scored a couple of bases. Which is two as well. obviously, it's a hat trick, Chris. It must be.
Do we agree on this?
We agree on this.
It's the right answer. Got 300 quid.
Called him son as well.
What are the chances of that question coming up, eh?
No. Well done, computer. Moving on a little bit. They get up to 16,000 now. This is a £16,000 question. Which is where Andy Gray gets a little bit bashful and an impatient Richard Keyes mask slips a little.
Who starred opposite Marilyn Monroe in the 1957 film The Prince and the Showgirl? Laurence Olivier, Tony Curtis, Clark Gable, Tom Yule.
I'm a big Monroe fan. I'm horribly, horribly embarrassed that I don't know this.
I
love Marilyn Monroe. I've got books and books and movies that she's been in. When you need it, and you want to pluck it from there, it's...
Plenty of time. There's no time limit.
Okay, so we need a lifeline. Question now, which one?
Keyes sounds genuinely annoyed at this point. Can we just get on with it, please?
Look, you don't know it. I mean, what a world we live in. Discovering that Andy Gray is a big Marilyn Monroe fan.
He's got books and films that she's been in, he says. Wow.
Presumably, books about her.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, I would hope so. I didn't think of him as a big reader, but still. Of course, we haven't yet been introduced to their other phone-a-friend. And of course their other phone-a-friend is Judith fucking Keppel, the first ever winner of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
What?
Yep, that's exactly what Tarrant says, basically.
I've got a couple of good phone friends. A little bit debating over because that's the thing as well.
One of which came here and won £1 million. Judith Keppel.
You don't know Judith Keppel.
We know her intimately.
What would Judith Keppel be doing with two oiks like you? No, I don't mean that unkindly.
That's nice.
She's... almost as if a woman of her stature.
She's her phone a friend, one of them.
But does so she it's know her it? Or Alan Shearer?
No, he's bomb.
There is no chance.
Which one do we
not
go
the
with?
Prayer now.
Is it Alan? Is
no
it
no Shearer?
Judith Keppel. Oh my God, extraordinary.
This is like a dream dinner party. Judith Keppel, Alan Shearer, Andy Gray and Richard Keyes. I don't know who's
and Chris Tarrant.
Yeah.
And the tension is building between Tarrant and Keyes, yeah, for sure.
So to get this Marilyn Monroe question right, they call Judith Keppel. Of course, Keyes makes the call.
I've got Andy and Richard here. They're actually doing surprisingly well. They're on £8,000.
£8,000?
Yes, but with your help, Judith, we can get up to
£16,000. Okay, I'll
try. Lots of luck.
Thank you.
Richard, your time starts now.
Judith, who starred opposite Marilyn Monroe in the 1957 film The Prince and the Showgirl?
Laurence Olivier.
We knew, Judith, thank you very much, darling.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed. We need
okay.
No,
good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
We go no further.
Well, you wouldn't have got that from Alan Shearer, would you?
Not a chance. Craig Bellamy, he would have said.
Is there more cast iron certainty of a darling than Richard Keyes calling Judith Keppel live on TV in 2002?
Oh, incredible.
Thanks, darling.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. So, yeah, they get the question right, and it's on to £32,000. The pressure is on. The question is, which poet wrote A Thing of Beauty is a Joy Forever?
This is like penalty shootout time, isn't it?
It is. World Cup final.
Chris Waddle.
Oh, no.
Euro 96.
Pierce. Oh, dear.
Gareth Southgate. Southgate.
You're saying Keats, is it?
Why are you saying Keats?
Why is he picking Keats?
Keatsy.
I wish I could tell you why.
Lord Byron.
Three's a lucky number.
Nah, bad and dangerous to know.
It's a bit like Keyes.
Keyes, Richard Keyes, Richard Keats. Yes. Keats.
Of course.
Richard Keats.
Richard Keats. He was bang on, though. Got it right.
It was Keatsy.
It was Keatsy, yeah, after all. But I have to say, it took 5 minutes of deliberation to get to that point, after which there was something of a tap-in for everybody.
How do you feel?
Like I need a shave. That took so long.
Yeah. Not something we ventured into before, but I couldn't ignore it. Not our thing, I have to say. But can't ignore the Keyes discourse.
Give him a big hand. This is £4,000. Well played. Right. Well done. Brilliant. Thank you. That was absolutely tremendous.
But yeah, so there it is. They ended up with £64,000 for their respective charities. Not bad, not bad.
Yeah, well played. I mean, good choice of phone a friend.
They could have gone home with nothing. So that was indeed the Keyes and Gray on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in 2002 in all its glory. Are there any more depths we can plummet with this, Charlie? I fear not.
No, but I mean, that was joyous. I mean, the funny thing is, I probably would have watched that at the time. There's a reasonable chance, but have no memory of it. But what a treat. Thank you so much to the listener who brought that to our attention.
Yeah, thanks very much to David C433. Dave, highly enjoyable, wasn't it?
Everything I hoped for and more.
Squeezed so much into that episode. Well done, everybody. Yeah, we'll be back on Tuesday with another adjudication panel. See everybody next week.
Beams.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.